I'm Scott Hanselman, and I work at Microsoft. I've worked there now for a little over 3 years, actually. Some people think I've worked there longer, but I worked not at Microsoft for a very long time. You can follow me on Twitter, and please listen to both of my podcasts. I've got a podcast called Hansel Minutes that you can listen to when you're in a Belgian traffic jam, or This Developer's Life, which is a new podcast that I'm doing with Rob Connery. It's a very, very different kind of podcast, and I encourage you to try a few episodes. And then feel free to tweet nice things about this webcam only using the hashtag webcamps. If you're going to tweet mean things, cruel things, please misspell webcamps. This will make it easier for me to have feedback from my boss. You can get all of the content that we're going to talk about and more content, including training kits. You can run training camps at your own company if you want to, or your own community. You can get all of that at webcamps.ms. and trainingkit.webcamps.ms. You can download all the slides, all the demos, everything that we do here. We'll make sure that you can have all of the code. All right. So if you know me, you know that I'm not here to sell you anything. I'm not a salesman. I'm more of a teacher. And my goal is to put all of this stuff into context, to explain how it all fits together. Sometimes it seems like Microsoft is always releasing new stuff, and it's very overwhelming, and new pieces are coming out just as you finished working on an old piece. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the Microsoft Web Platform, including the new stuff that we released in January, the January web release. So we know that the web platform consists of IIS at the bottom, IIS 7 or IIS 7.5. SQL Server is our database, and the Entity Framework now is kind of the way to talk to SQL Server. Entity Framework offers a lot more ways to do things like model first, code first, database first than before. The Entity Framework in .NET 4 is really nice. It's much nicer than it was before. We've got ASP.NET 4. And then for JavaScript on the client side, we have a choice of the AJAX Control Toolkit, which is still around, but it depends on jQuery and it cares about jQuery. Microsoft has made a huge, huge bet on jQuery, and we'll talk a little bit about that when we see some JavaScript demos. I'm not going to spend very much time in the slides because I know you guys would rather see code. I'll just run through a few things and then we'll spend the next 2 hours looking at some code, which, depending on what kind of person you are, 2 hours of code might be like extremely exciting, or it could be a way to sleep. So either way, feel free to sleep in the back if you find the code boring. Now, today's web developers, I want to point out that this slide came from Microsoft Marketing. This is my Microsoft Marketing face. So maybe you are a happy Belgian clip art man or a professional software developer. Perhaps you're a cute librarian who just less than threes web apps. Maybe you are a small child who wants to program but keeps spilling paint on himself. These are the personas that they give us in the marketing people. And they say, well, I'm a professional person. This is how they want to split this up. The ASP.NET framework is running it all. And this is really important to remember. As developers, marketing people say lots of stuff. Okay? There's Web Matrix, and there's Lightswitch, and there's Visual Studio, and there's this, and there's that. But what we as developers need to remember is that it's ASP.NET underneath. It's all ASP.NET. If you're a web forms developer, and you're concerned that perhaps you need to learn new skills, maybe you are worried that MVC is going to take over and put you in a bad position, don't worry, because you know all this stuff at the bottom. All that core ASP.NET knowledge is still there. MVC is not a replacement for ASP.NET. It sits on top of it. You're hearing about Web Matrix. You're not sure if you want to spend your time learning it. Don't worry about it. It's all ASP.NET and IIS underneath. If I were to write this as an equation, I would say ASP.NET is greater than MVC, is greater than WebForms. ASP.NET has the caching, the notion of pages, profiles, intrinsics, globalization, master pages, membership, HTTP handlers, HTTP modules. You know this stuff. If you're a web forms developer and you're worried, don't worry. Just because you don't hear about a technology in a Microsoft keynote doesn't mean that technology is dead. Just because one technology is kind of the sexy, interesting technology doesn't mean that the other technology is going somewhere. I've used the term before. MVC and web forms is like a motorcycle and a car. They serve different purposes. Some people have both a motorcycle and a car. With a motorcycle, you have a lot of control. You can go very fast, but you need to know what you're doing. That's MVC. A lot of power, but you can kill yourself. Web forms, it's more comfortable. It's focused on the driving experience. Just because we've come out with a new motorcycle doesn't mean that the car is going anywhere. Cars are great for getting groceries, for taking the kids to school. Motorcycles are great for getting hurt and going fast. MVC is like a motorcycle. Webforms is like a car. We're not going to stop making cars. Webforms has a purpose. Additionally, you can have hybrid applications. Do you guys know CodePlex, right? CodePlex? Do you know CodePlex is part Webforms, part MVC? It's one application. One ASP.NET application can be MVC, it can be OData, it can be Webforms, it can have HTTP handlers, all in one app. You can even use web matrix applications and bring in what they call ASP.NET web pages and make all of these clip art people happy. So web forms is great for professional developers. It's a control-based model. MVC, also a professional developer environment, gives you a lot of power. And then now what we call ASP.NET web pages. Web pages is what web matrix makes. And I'll talk a little bit about web matrix. So the web forms engine that sits on top of ASP.NET web forms. Those are what we know as like less than percent and percent less than. That's web forms. There's now the Razor view engine. The Razor view engine is a new syntax. And again, as I say, when Microsoft comes out with these new syntaxes, people start to panic. And I'm here to explain how these fit together so you can decide if you want to panic. Visual Studio 2010 lets you do all of these things. But if you're a small child who paints on himself, then you might look at Web Matrix. That's what they've been telling you. They've been saying Web Matrix is a toy. And I thought this too. Even though I work at Microsoft and my colleagues work on Web Matrix, I was like, what is this Web Matrix thing? It's too cute. Programming should be hard, right? Computers should be hard. But I played with Web Matrix, and I want to show you a couple things that I built. And I think that maybe professional developers have a reason to use Web Matrix sometimes. Because when you realize how it all fits together, it doesn't matter what the marketing people call it. We as professional developers just want to get the work done. The other thing that just came out was Web Platform Installer 3. And this is a really great application. Who uses Web Platform Installer? Cool. So for those of you who haven't, I'll do a quick demo. It's really nice because it's got a very small download, and it will automatically go up and get whatever you need and all of the dependencies. It is absolutely the easiest way to install things like SQL Server Express, to install ASP.NET MVC. Instead of having to hunt for downloads, it's all in one place, and it will take care of any dependencies that you might need, and it's automatically localized into 9 languages. The other thing that's cool about Web Platform Installer is it doesn't just install products, it installs apps. So I'll show you how we do that in a demo here. All right, so I brought up a little virtual machine over here. So this is a VM that is fresh, totally fresh Windows 7. It doesn't have any developer tools on it. The only thing I put on it was Web Platform Installer before I got here. There's no Visual Studio or anything. I can go and run the Web Platform Installer. And it's going to go and pull down from an Atom feed. Atom feeds ATOM. It's like an RSS feed. And it's bringing down from Microsoft a list of all the different products that are in this spotlight here. I'll zoom in so you guys can see that in the back. We've got MVC 3. We have the new Orchard CMS. Here's Web Matrix. So I'm going to just say add Web Matrix to my shopping cart of products. I can also install things like Drupal. One of the things people don't realize is that the Web Platform Installer and IIS support PHP. So if you want to run ASP.NET apps and PHP apps at the same time, that's totally cool. And we'll even install them for you. And we'll configure IIS to make it work, which is really nice. I can go in here and say add ASP.NET MVC as well. Right now, I've just said Web Matrix, and it says one item to be installed. So I'm building up my shopping cart. And we'll say install. shut off my magnifier here. So it would make a list, a manifest, of all of the different things that it would need to install to get that to work. And it's going to install Web Matrix, which is about 7 megabytes. So it's doing some stuff. This progress bar, this is the I have no idea when this will be done progress bar. This is the get a coffee progress bar right here. Oh, so that worked. So then it would list out all of the products it installed. So this is a totally fresh VM. So this is Web Matrix. And again, I thought it was kind of a toy. It wasn't really my thing. But I started playing with it and realizing that there's a couple different kinds of programmers. Like, there is the kind of programmer that will look at Web Matrix and will say, right off the bat, where are the tests? If you say that when you look at Web Matrix or the code that Web Matrix creates, then don't use Web Matrix. It's that easy. Don't wear shoes that don't fit. Nothing wrong with that. But in the US, we have a couple different kinds of programmers, right? We have the really passionate, pure programmers. We have the very pragmatic programmers. But Drew and I were talking about this. We have another kind of programmer that we call the getter done. This is the kind of programmer just wants to get something done, right? I just want to make this website, get it handled, man. Just get it done. I don't really care. It's small. It's simple. It's basic. Why do I need to go and put together a whole complicated system for something when I just want to get her done? And Rob Connery and I had this webcast that we put together called This Developer's Life, and it really just needed a main page to list the podcasts, and it needed a details page to look at each of the podcasts, and a feed. It seemed like overkill to use, you know, Embraco or something like that. So we went and we ended up using Web Matrix. So I'm going to switch over, show you a little bit about Razor and Web Matrix, and then see what we can do here. Just go ahead and turn this guy off. So I've jumped out of the virtual machine here, and I'm going to bring up the Web Matrix on my own machine. The other thing that Web Matrix does, though, is that I can go and say, give me a site from a gallery. So this is actually going up and getting all of these applications that I might want to install. So for example, I could install Embraco from here. And how do you typically install an open source application today? Right? You go out on the web, and you Google with Bing, and you go and you find it, and then you download it, and you unzip it, and you read the README, and you figure out what it's going to take to install that. Well, there's a thing built into ASP.NET and IIS called the Web Deploy. That is also baked into IIS, and it's baked into Web Matrix. So I can click on Embraco and hit Next, and here it's going to have a link. Again, let me see if I can get a decent magnifier here for you guys. There we go. So here's Embraco. And notice that it's actually coming from Embraco. This is a really important thing to point out. This gallery didn't bring together a bunch of web applications and host them at Microsoft. This is about community open source applications. This is really coming from where Embraco puts their builds. Could have been SourceForge. In this case, they're using CodePlex. And I'll hit Accept, and they're downloading Embraco. So they brought that zip file down, and that zip file, that manifest for this application, contains some parameters. Embraco is actually saying, if I'm going to be set up, I need these things. And Web Matrix actually generated this form for us. This is a generated form. You can do this too. I have an application I wrote called DOSBlog. It's a blogging engine. It took about 4 hours to package up DOSBlog to work like this. You can take your existing open source applications and submit them to the gallery so that you'll be in there as well. You can also, if you have enterprise applications, package them up as these zip files and make them easier to install. If your people don't want to use Web Matrix, they can just go into IIS and say install from package, and then point to the zip file on disk directly. And it'll generate a form like this. So here I'll just go and give a database password and database administrator. I think if I remember the password. We'll see if I got it right. Okay, so now it's installing Embraco. Let me just, while it's doing that, I'm going to run over here. You see my SQL database? Okay, Embraco just appeared here. If I bring up IIS, we'll see that a site just got created in IIS. Congratulations, you've installed Embraco. Hit OK. So now I'm inside of WebMatrix, and there's Embraco. I'm going to hit Run in WebMatrix, and I'm already here. I'm going to walk through there online, accept this, accept that. Do you have a database? Can you see this here? They've already filled out the Embraco configuration from that information I gave earlier. So I'll just hit Install, and it's going and setting itself up. So I'm actually setting up a CMS here in, 30 seconds. Apparently that's not a good password. Make a big business website. It's pretty cool. I like these guys. Let's make it look like this. That's pretty. Install. So we're installing that starter kit from Embraco. Now what? Let's see it. And WebMatrix is the thing that brought it down. And it looks pretty cool. That could have been WordPress or Joomla or DOSBlog or BlogEngine.net or whatever. So if you're a consultant that is creating websites for clients, this is a really cool way for you to do something in 10 minutes and then build them for 10 hours. Maybe say, hey boss, it's going to take like a day, probably 2 days to install Embraco. I'm going to work from home. How's it going with that Embraco installation? Oh man, I'm going to have to work the weekend. So now notice that right now we're running on localhost, this high port here. What came along with WebMatrix was IIS Express. And if you're a professional developer who has to deal with the differences between Visual Web Developer, or what used to be called Cassini, the tiny web server, right, that came with Visual Studio, and IIS itself, if you get frustrated with dealing with IIS as a developer, maybe you're not an IT pro, or perhaps your boss or your IT department doesn't want you to have IIS installed because they don't want that. They think it might be a security issue for everyone to have IIS because IIS installs as a service and it needs to be administrated. This is using IIS Express. So this is the full IIS, complete IIS, except it's installed as a user and it starts and stops as you like it. It's not a service. So there's IIS Express right there. It's complete IIS. That means compatibility issues that you might have going between Visual Web Developer Server or Cassini and IIS go away. If you're doing complicated WCF services, multiple sites talking to each other, that goes away. If you need to do things like SSL, you can do SSL over IIS Express. It is full IIS, but when I shut everything down, IIS Express goes away. Starts and stops. So it's just-in-time IIS. That is something that comes with WebMatrix. It's free. Runs on XP and up. WebMatrix is great. Runs on everything. And in March, April, whenever springtime, whenever Visual Studio Service Pack 1 comes out, right now you can get a beta. Whenever Service Pack 1 comes out, you'll have IIS support directly inside of Visual Studio as well. So you'll be able to stop using Cassini. Cassini is dead. And start using a full web server. Compatibility issues will go away. And a lot more flexibility is going to be enabled. The other thing that you can do, which is kind of cool, with WebMatrix, let's see this. Why don't we do this? Let's go to the desktop. And I'll just make a new folder. Okay, it's my folder. And I'm going to right-click on that folder and open it as a website. Drew showed me this. Maybe he'll help me with my with my demo. So I'm inside of Web Matrix here. And I could go and just, you know, make a page, new file. Hit run. IIS Express just started up there. And there's my page. So that's very basic. That's very simple. Things that start to become a little bit more interesting, though, would be when we start to access you know, little bits of data. So for example, I can go over here to databases, say new database, and let's just call this guy demo. And the extension is SDF, SQL database file. This is using a thing called SQL Compact. Just like we talked about IIS Express is a just-in-time IIS. You don't have to install a big service. SQL Compact is just-in-time SQL. It's a tiny, in-process, free, embedded database that works, acts, behaves like SQL Server. It's free, no licensing, and you can X-copy it. How many times have you made a small application or been asked to make a very small, basic application and send it up to maybe an inexpensive hoster? €5 a month or something like that. Very basic hoster, except it's going to cost a lot more to have SQL Server. And you didn't do the application just because, I don't want to deal with SQL Server, right? Just the app would be maybe 5 pages, but the SQL Server part of it would be just more trouble than it's worth. SQL Compact is the database for that experience. If you need a database and your hoster doesn't have any database options that work for you, you can use SQL Compact. So this here is a SQL Compact database. I'll make a new table. Let's just make a couple of things here. What are we going to do? Let's say, let me see, product name probably. Name. What is it, like nvarchar or something like that. Make a little tiny products database. Name, and let's do price. And price will be money. And I'll call that products. So just made a little tiny database, just like that. Switch over. I probably need an ID, actually, probably too. New column, ID. Make him an int. How do I make that an identity, true? Yeah, it's grayed out, though. Is it too late? I don't need it. Really, I don't need it? Don't tease me now. I don't need an identity. You're freaking me out, man. Product, Xbox, price, 10. Product, PS3, price, 300. Product, PSP, $12. Price, Wii, 9,000 yen. Price, ColecoVision, 1 million. And something else I can't think of. But, do you think that I can just do that like that? It's crazy. You're freaking me out. All right, so let's go back over here. This page is kind of boring. And I'm going to use Razor, and I'm going to just say db equals database.open. We just call it demo. Var data equals db.query select star from products. And then I guess I can just spin around, right? Can I just go like this, Drew? What do I do here? Let's do a product.name, I guess. One of the things that's funny about Razor is that it's so simple that the it worked exactly as it should. Break out of the code block. like div. Like that. Yeah, is that cool? One of the things that was funny about learning Razor for the first time is that as a programmer, I started to try to think about syntax, and I was like trying to learn the syntax of Razor. Like I thought it was a new language. But it's not a new language. It's a syntax to use languages you already know. So you already know VB, you already know C#. And Razor is really smart. You notice how I didn't have to go and say, close that. It just knew because I was switching into HTML. And then when I wanted to use something else, like product name, I could just do it. Let me give you an example here. Let's do like, this is the guy that wrote it, who is apparently watching online and correcting me as I type. You don't need the div, he said. It'll detect it. That's what happens when you stream online. I like to just go to other countries and just, no, it won't. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. And see, I think it's really cool that David did that, actually, because what he's trying to tell you is exactly what I was just about to say, which is that if you outthink Razor, you're going to get in trouble. I was trying to give it information and give it a hint and put a div like that. And to David's point, it's just not necessary. Like, for example, let's do the for loop thing that we were about to do there, right? Yeah, I like it before. We'll talk about that. So, you know, I equals 0, I is less than 5, I plus plus. Hello, Scott. Is having all sorts of fun here. Oh, yeah. Let's do this. We'll put him in an li because we'll make a list of stuff. And then we'll use the I. Now, if I were going to do that in web forms, right, I would have to start the block, less than percent. I'd have to end the block over here. And then this is the part that I find very funny. What do we always have to do here when we're doing things in ASP.NET? I'll fast forward and I'll show you. It's about markup transitions. To do this in web forms, we have to go keep switching in and out of code and markup, code and markup. You know it. You feel it when you have to do that. We've been doing this for many, many years, right? Here we've got like 6 transitions. For loop is there. And this is the part I find so funny, that end brace. That's really all that's needed, but we feel the need to wrap it in another 6 bytes just to make sure it feels snuggly and warm. You know, wouldn't it be nice if it were a little simpler? PHP does this with 2 markup transitions, but you need an echo. With Razor, you just say at, and then you start writing code. And that's what I mean that it's not a language. It's the language you already know. You just say at, and then you write some code, and it will handle the rest. It knows that li is not code, and it handles it for you. And this it knows as well, and then it transitions automatically. So a bunch of these transitions are automatic. And then when you're writing it, it's very fluid. It's very clean. We could even say, let's do this. Oh, Help me out here, Drew. There we go. And even if I put something like an exclamation point after the variable, it knows that that's not part of the name of the variable, and it transitions automatically. Periods, things like that, all handled for you. So my buddy Rob and I started playing with this. Let's take our little database here, and we'll get rid of this for each. And then we'll use a helper. I've got a little bit of code here that they've written for me ahead of time where I can go and say, take a grid. It's called a web grid, and that's a helper method. And I'll just hand it that data. Okay? And then I can say, get the HTML for that grid. Or I could put in a number of pages. We could say something like rows per page 3. Right? You get the kind of get her done kind of attitude, right? Yeah, I don't have any tests. But in this case, you know, it does what I need it to do. Maybe I would want to generate some kind of a chart. Well, there's a helper for that too. I could say something like, what is it like? I could say like new up a chart, and I could pass in, I could say new chart dot data bind table, give it the data. And then I could maybe save that to the cache. That's going to return a key. Then down here, I could say make an image, source equal, and we'll have another page that will generate that image, our CSHTML page. And we'll pass in that key. You see how I'm not thinking about the transitions and doing something like that. So I'll go and I'll make another page called chart. And then in here, I'll just say chart.get from cache. Pull that out of the request, grab that from the cache, and then write out the chart. Make sense? I'll get a huge error, and I'll be embarrassed. It was like I never remember the right number of constructors for that. I think I need to say like 200 to 300, which is really ugly. But you get the idea. So Rob and I took this kind of fast iteration, simple, basic application type thing, and we went and we actually moved our podcast over to it. So I've switched to applications now. And we have a post file for each one of our podcasts. This CSHTML extension is actually ignored when you visit the pages. So here I've got like 1.0.5 home run. Go ahead and run that. Visit the site. This is our podcast site. All of our shows. Here's the show where we interviewed David Hennemeyer Hansen and Dan Bricklin. Look at the URL. Right, that extension is removed. The URL is nice and clean. So what's happening here is we almost have like an MVC type of an environment, except everything's in one place. The M, the V, the C are all in one place. This is a way to get started. This is a way to jumpstart basic applications for college students, for enthusiasts. But I could take an application like my little chart, my little basic chart application that we just made, and I could go over here and then launch Visual Studio and open that up in Visual Studio and then move over to MVC. I could graduate to something like MVC. And Rob and I were actually very, very happy with with doing this. We found it to be an extremely nice experience. It was very extremely lightweight. It's the kind of thing where I might not want an MVC site. I might think about jumping into PHP, but I didn't need to. Little admin sites, little sites that don't require a CMS. And then if the site gets too big or it outgrows this environment, we'll move it over and we'll use these CSHTML files as views in our MVC application. So that was something that was kind of very enlightening to us, that even though it's being marketed as something for the breadth developer, I think there's something there for the pro, for small applications. So I just wanted to share that with you guys. And of course, if you have any questions that are burning questions, or if you think that something is complete BS, please do raise your hands and ask the question. Yes, sir. Right, there's IntelliSense for CSS and for HTML, but because so many things are dynamic, there's just not a lot of IntelliSense in there. There's no IntelliSense turned on in WebMatrix. If you want that, you need to use Visual Studio Express or Visual Studio. So you can still use a free IDE like Visual Studio Express and get IntelliSense, but no, there's no IntelliSense for Razor. And so you saw that lack of IntelliSense kind of rotted my brain a little bit, and I had a couple of yellow screens of death there. But notice that there was no compilation step. I was just kind of make a change, refresh. In fact, when Rob Connery and I were writing the little podcast site, we were doing it over Dropbox. So we were doing peer programming over Dropbox. He was in Hawaii, I was in the US. We both had WebMatrix open, talking to the same files. He would make a change. I would get a notification that it changed and hit refresh. So we were doing kind of extreme peer programming, and I'm sure that all of the agile purists were kind of rolling over in their graves. This is a horrible thing that we're doing. But we got her done, and we did it in about 6 hours. You know, it was fun. It was fun to be sloppy. And I don't mean sloppy in a bad way. I mean we spend all day writing tests, and it was just kind of nice to bang out my podcast site with minimal effort, and I had a lot of fun doing it. The syntax is fun. The IDE was lightweight. You can do it on a netbook. And then publishing it, by the way, is insanely easy, because it supports web deploy. We saw how easy it was to bring down Embraco. I can also go here and say publish. And we have one-click deploy now. So when we update this, we just hit publish. It automatically figures out the diff, and it will upgrade it. And in the future, in Service Pack 1 of Visual Studio, you'll be able to take that SQL Compact and send it off to SQL Server full-sized. So you can develop on Compact and IIS Express, and then deploy to IIS and SQL Server proper. One of the points that I keep trying to make, and I'll bring up more and more in this talk, is this idea of the right size Lego. In the past, I've always felt like Microsoft released Lego sizes, Lego pieces of different sizes. Like they would say, here's a big one, and this is for babies. And then here's the tiny one for the professional, you know, and you need to fit them together. You know, try to get SharePoint to work with this, or BizTalk to work with that. And the Lego pieces were all the wrong size. But now, with things like OData support in SharePoint and MVC being pluggable at almost every layer and standardization and jQuery, it makes it easy to snap things together where solutions are a little of this and a little of that. So I feel like we're releasing Lego, I know it's not plural, sorry, Lego that is the right size. And it's just more fun when there's less friction between you and the different products that you chose. Moving from code to markup, there's a number of different ways, and I'm still kind of learning about it myself. You saw that I did that block where I did @curlybrace. And you see how you're moving in and out of code and markup within that Razor block. You can also do explicit writes. It really comes down to what you want things to look like. But I'm finding more and more that if I don't think about it, it usually is the right thing. When I double outthink myself, when I double-check myself, then I get in trouble. Commenting is very simple as well. You can comment everything with a Razor comment, do C# comments, comment out entire blocks. Now, Razor is going to be the standard in MVC 3. So some of these different things like master pages, what we call layouts, are going to be the way that you do things in MVC 3. You can avoid repeating yourself by putting together composed pages, defining a layout, like we did this with our podcast site. We had a layout. It has a render body call. And that body lives somewhere else and then defines a shared layout. We'll see a little bit more about this in a bit. You can even organize things in terms of sections. This is just like master pages now. So the shared layout is saying a section here and a section here and a section here. And then the page gets to decide where those things appear. I would encourage you to play with it. I always put these three boxes here because I think it's funny. How many people are doing MVC professionally? Okay, good. How many people want to? Okay, cool. They always make me put three boxes up. And I've talked about this in a couple of other videos. Like if you're learning MVC, these three boxes would be the thing that makes the light bulb turn on in your head. Like you go, oh, model view controller. Oh, go, thank you, three boxes. Now it all makes sense. I tried to understand model view controller for months and months and months, and I never quite figured out what was in charge of what. It took me a while for that light bulb to turn on. So I'll talk a little bit about that and do some MVC basics. I'm going to go in here to Visual Studio and launch the MVC 3. How many people actually here? How many people are on Visual Studio 2010? How many people are like on 2005 but came anyway? No? That's cool. A couple of people were in 2005, 2008, and one of the things that I pointed out to them is that remember that you can do older development. You can develop .NET 2 applications using Visual Studio. So you watch the list of choices. Just lowers a little bit. We'll actually remove the awesome, and then we'll put the awesome back as you use different versions. So I still have .NET 2.0 applications that I am using and developing on Visual Studio 2010. So just because you have 2.0 applications doesn't mean you shouldn't switch over to the new stuff. Let's bring up MVC 3. I'm going to bring up this dialog box. I anticipate that we're going to start filling this dialog box up with new things. This is empty space here. Maybe you'll see mobile application, file new mobile application, intranet application, maybe portals. I mean, we should, as a community, talk about what we want to do and what we want in this white space. Right now, the choices are empty or intranet application. One of the things in MVC that you'll hear about over and over and over is the idea that everything is pluggable. Those things are pluggable. This box right here of the choices of view engine, like ASPX, which is the default in MVC 2, and Razor, which is the new default. If you want to use another view engine, like Enamel or Spark or Velocity or whatever, you can get in there. If your company has its own view engine, you can do that. Also, this box here, create a unit test project. If you have a favorite unit testing framework, CS Unit, MB Unit, NUnit, you can get in there as well. So you can take over. If there's anything you don't like about MVC, fix it, change it, right? Even if you wanted to do something crazy and you know, recompile the whole thing and make your own version of MVC, it's all open source. A lot of people don't realize how much of this stuff is open source. So let me go and fire this up here, and I'll just put a breakpoint F9, and we'll take a F5. So I just made a Hello World application, and I hit F5. Bring up our application. It's pretty basic. If I click on the About button, I've just shown up here in the About method. So look at the URL, /home/about. Somehow, magically got me into Home Controller and the About method. That's that convention over configuration that we're hearing more and more about. I could expand this. I could change this. We could add a new method. Just copy paste. Just made a new method. Hit F5. Type in /home/poo. and I'm there. I didn't edit any XML files, I didn't run any wizards, I didn't launch any configuration apps. I just added a new function and somehow it was made available. That's convention over configuration. The default route automatically created the controller for me and called that method. This can be difficult for people to understand when they're moving from a web forms environment where you have like a page load event or a button click event. That gets into that very distinct difference between web forms and MVC. Web forms tries to make things clean and productive and easy and encapsulated. HTTP is a little messy and complicated, and there's posts and gets and form and all these things. Web forms hides that. There's no page load event on the web. There's no button click event. But that's the kind of abstraction that a business programmer needs. MVC really embraces HTTP, embraces the underlying technology. So in this case, they've automatically called home. They've automatically called poo. This is a front controller, model view controller. So far, the only thing that's been involved is the controller. I hit F5. Yellow screen of death. Poo or its master was not found. And then it shows me all the places that it looked. It was looking for the view. How did it get that name? Why did it go looking for this? Convention, because that was the name of the method. So I can right click here and say add view. There's my poo view. Hit add. Type something in. And we're back. So MVC. So far we've done the C controller. The controller receives the request. It does some stuff, in this case nothing. And then it transfers that control over to the view. There's no M yet. We haven't done anything M related. Let's go and make a model. We'll say add class person. Here's our person class. Hopefully everyone can see that okay. And I'll say prop tab tab string tab tab first tab prop tab tab string tab tab last enter prop tab tab int tab tab age. So there's a person, just made a model. This is our model. I'll go back over to my home controller, rp equals new person. I'll hit control dot. It's going to automatically add the using statement. See that okay? There you go. If you watch our using statement up at the top here, when I hit control dot, line 6, just added that model. New person, first, Scott, last, Hanselman. I think in Belgium I picked up an extra N on the way in. I'm not sure how that happened. Age 29 again. Don't laugh. What are you laughing at 29? It'll make me feel bad. So there's the model. That's the go to the database and do some stuff. Part of the getting of the model, okay? And then we'll pass that in P. Right, Drew? Right, wake up, Drew. Do you think this will work, Drew? Any thoughts? Your confidence is underwhelming. Cool. So you see what's going on there. Let's talk about it in a little bit of detail. The home controller got created automatically. That was something that ASP.NET did. When it saw slash home, it knew, we say that it knewed up a home controller. If it was called Scott controller and I said slash Scott, it would have newed up a Scott controller. Then it saw the slash poo. In this case, it passed in. It automatically invoked this action. It called this action. Then I did some stuff. I went to the database, And then I say return view, and I pass it in my model. Now over here, that's all it is. Notice that there's nothing on line one. There's no directives. There's really nothing complicated going on there. And I got to use the razor syntax that I used in WebMatrix, that familiar syntax used in this app. It let me just write out this page, this line, and you know how that would be complicated in ASP.NET web forms. There'd be lots of switching in and out of the angle brackets. But there was no IntelliSense here either, to the gentleman's point earlier about IntelliSense. When I hit dot, I'm kind of stuck, right? Let's delete that view. Go back over here, and I'm going to say add view again. Except this time, I'm going to say it's a strongly typed view. That was what was called a dynamic view. If you're a Rubyist, or you like Ruby, or you're thinking about going over to Ruby, as I think all, you know, a lot of professional programmers do, and I myself included, in fact, the dynamic keyword and the dynamic features in C# have actually kept me playing in C# and enjoying things like Razor so much. And if you listen to the podcast that I did with Rob Connery, who actually does Ruby right now, he's finding similarities between the flexibility of Razor and the dynamic features. I liked that I didn't have to have IntelliSense there, because I could pass in anything I wanted to. It made it very flexible. But here I'm going to say create a strongly typed view, and I'm going to select person. All right. And hit add. Now when I start typing dot, I get my IntelliSense. So this is a view. It's still a Razor view, except now it's a strongly typed view. I get IntelliSense, and that's kind of friendly as well. And the only thing that was added was at the very top of the page where it says at model. It's a very clean syntax. Right there on line one, it says the model for this page is person, and then it automatically gives you that IntelliSense. It makes it very, very friendly. You've also got this thing called a view bag. So you can actually have the best of both worlds. You can have a strongly typed view where the forms and the things that you build on that view are strongly typed, like in this case, person. But I could go over here, and I could just say viewbag dot my message to you. You are awesome. Oops, there we go. And then I could go back over here and just output that, right, Drew? We just go at like this. My message, oops, to you. See how it's popping up that thing that says this expression will be resolved at runtime. So I can have a strongly typed view for the majority of it, but I can avoid making complicated view models. I think that sometimes MVC applications by people who are trying to be really pure tend to be a little bit overcomplicated because they add a lot of view models, a lot of strongly typed views. And there's the view bag stuff. They add a lot of strongly typed models and view models that are custom for every single thing, and then they'll end up littering their applications with all of these throwaway classes, classes that exist only for one reason. Like, for example, in this instance, if I wanted to pass in my person and one other piece of information, do I really want to make another class to hold that or throw it into the view model in a hash table? The dynamic feature, having that view bag that's the same on both sides, makes it really, really clean syntax. And I can throw anything I want in there, not just strings, but any objects at all, which is pretty cool. Any questions? No? Cool. Oh, yes. Yeah, dynamic is a C# and a VB thing, and dynamic in this case is C# 4, right? So you can use dynamic stuff however you like if you want to pass things around dynamically in any kind of application. I'm just showing a very, very specific use of it in the context of a dynamic type that is shared between the controller and the view and makes passing information very clean. So So now we're seeing that circle of life that is model view controller. The controller caught that on the first request, went to the model and did some stuff, and then sent that off into the view. And then that view creates URLs, and then we're off. Okay. Now this person model, though, Drew, why don't you help me make a database here, my friend? So I want to go and use the new package management stuff that's built in, which is kind of slick. Have you guys seen NuGet? Have you played with this at all? NuGet is a package manager. I can come here into Solution Explorer, and I can say add library package reference. And this is actually going to go up online and find a big list of open source or free packages that I can bring down inside of my application. Like, if I were going to do something like adding error logging to this MVC application, how would I do that, right? I would go off and I would search for it, and I'd find it, and I'd download it, and I'd unzip it, and I'd put it in a lib folder, and it would be kind of a hassle. I would go and probably use let me Google that with bingforyou.com. There we go. It cost me $5 to register, so I figured I'd do it. I'd search for like ELMA, which is my error logging management, error logging modules and helpers. Maybe one of you would email me, hey, Scott, can you help me add error logging? And I would go and I would send you a link, and then this would happen on your screen, and it would type it in for you and push the button, because apparently you're not able to do that. And then I would go up here and I'd download it, right? That's how you do it. And I have to read the instructions and edit my web config, and it would be a big event. That's how I would do it in the old days, last week. This is the future. So we're going to do it a little differently. This package management console here is running inside Visual Studio. I noticed that I've just made the fonts bigger and pulled it out here. This is actually PowerShell. Any PowerShell fans? PowerShell people? Well, if you've been avoiding PowerShell, you can't anymore, because it's built into Visual Studio now. But if you don't want to learn PowerShell, all you have to do is know how to say install, hit tab, and then type in ELMA, for example, and then hit enter. That just went down, got ELMA, got the zip, looked at the manifest, unzipped it, added a reference to my project, merged in the stuff that I needed into my web config. I'll show you again just to make sure it's clear. I'm going to open up the web config. Bless you. And you see that there's an ELMA section here. Let's go and say uninstall package ELMA. It non-destructively merges in what I already have in the web config things that are required. So now I'll go ahead and run that. Are you guys familiar with ELMA? ELMA is like the greatest open source project no one's ever heard of. It's glorious. Let's say that people are hitting my site asking for resources and controllers that aren't available. They're causing errors on my site. ELMA is actually a little recorder for that. You know how, do you have like that thing that lets you pause live TV, like you can pause a football game? Right, call it like a DVR, digital video recorder. This is like a DVR for your code. This has actually recorded the things that have gone wrong, stored them. This is a DVR for yellow screens of death. So you can actually back up in time and see your yellow screen of death. Setting it up is hard, though. But with the package management console, it's really, really easy. And this package management console doesn't just work with MVC. It can work with anything. So your console apps could use this, or your WinForms applications. It ships with MVC, but you can go to nuget.org. You can browse the gallery, and you can see lots of different things. There's piles of stuff up there. And actually, we'll go and we'll make a database using some of this stuff. So here's the NuGet thing. You can install it. And the other thing that's great about NuGet is that it's pulling information from a feed. So if you work in a large enterprise that has a lot of shared libraries and you want your developers to use specific libraries, you can put those in a network share. And you don't even need to make a feed. You can actually point NuGet to that share, and it will automatically make those available. So then people can say install package some company utility. And you can make these as complicated or as simple as you want. They can extend PowerShell and add new commands, or they can be as simple as bringing down samples. All right. So Drew, let's do this here. I love how you're participating so intensely. It's yeah. Good. Drew is a program manager at Microsoft. You know, there's two kinds of people that work at Microsoft. There's like coders and PMs. And coders write code, ship products, do stuff, and PMs delete email. How's that working out for you? Yeah. You don't have a mic. Yeah, you can't fight me because you don't have a microphone. Let's use Entity Framework code first. So I'm going to bring up tab, enter Entity Framework code first. So I've just brought that down, and you notice that this has a specific license, so they actually have to warn me about the license. Another one of the flexible things that they have inside of NuGet. Does anyone know what this thing does? I have no idea. I've seen it a lot. I've never picked the right one though. Yeah, that's pretty good. All right. Was that the right one? I think that was the wrong one. I want that one. Cool. So I just brought down Entity Framework code first. And I can look over here in my references. Just like Elma was added earlier, I've got Entity Framework and some different things for data. Let's go back to our person class. And let us say that we might want to have a database with persons in them, right? Public int ID get set. And let's see. Public class person DB context derives from DB context. And I'm going to hit control dot again. I'm going to bring in the system.data.entity library. Now I'm going to make a public DB set of person. I guess we'll call it people. Does that look good? You're going to make me look bad, aren't you? Because I'm going to ask you for help, and you're going to like refuse. I'm too busy deleting email. It's okay, I'm a PM too. I don't do any work. I just control A, delete. That's what I do. I don't know how you do it. Okay, so here I've described my database, but I haven't done anything in SQL Server, and I haven't created a database. No databases have been created yet. I just did this. I just said that I have some people. Okay. Let's go over and make a controller. We'll say add controller. Person controller. We can do something like, for now, what did I say? People DB context? Is that what I called it? Anybody remember? Person DB context. Probably not the best name. Bring in that namespace. That control dot, I mean, you see how like most of this isn't really programming. It's just pressing control dot and then hitting enter. It's kind of nice. Var people equals db dot people dot toList. That's pretty much it, isn't it? And then maybe I'll hand those people over to that view. Now I don't have that view yet. I'll say add view. And we will have it be a scaffolded, so we're going to say a list of people. And then that just did a little bit of code generation that looked at that person class that I made, and it said first, last, age. Notice that it didn't put ID there, because ID is a primary key, presumably, because we named it ID. Again, no databases have been made here. But let's try this. Let's bring up my SQL Server database. I'm just going to leave that there. And I'm going to run the app and then watch this. And what did we make it? Was it person controller? Do I need to make any people? So So the database just showed up in SQL Express. I didn't say anything about connection strings. I didn't do anything about anything. I can open that up. And it went and it created the columns and stuff. So Entity Framework lets you do things three ways. Database first. I have an existing database, and I want to just make entities that I can manipulate in code. Model first, where I can edit entities in an entity relationship diagram in a visual editor. Or code first, where I can write some code like this, and it will create a database. Now, in this case, it did the right thing, right? We want the, they call this falling into the pit of success. Right? Even though I might make a mistake, it still is going to work out. In this case here, it created a database that just happened to be the name of my my entire class. Certainly, I can have complete control over that. You know, don't freak out and think that this is the way Microsoft wants you to do databases, but it's kind of slick. But let's say that we don't want to use SQL Server, or maybe we haven't got it installed. We don't want to run it that way. We want to use SQL Server Compact. Next, we should probably add something to the database. We don't have any data there, do we? Let's do that. Let's make this as risky a demo as possible, right? I'm going to add a create view. So that just went and generated a create view. Now, certainly, this is just to jumpstart you, but it, you know, it looks at the object and figures out what the right thing to do is. Apparently, I need to do that, so I need to find someone who knows what they're doing. And we can say person P what did we say? VarDB equals person DB context. db.people.addPerson db.saveChanges. That's cool, right? Look good. I'm going to just put a breakpoint there. Hit F5. Create new. Scott. Hanselman. 41. Create. This person here, I'm just going to pin them off in the corner here. So you see this little guy here I've pinned? Just a little note to self there. Make sense? So that just got added to the database. And you saw how that update model automatically took that form and the things that came out of the form and went blah, 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 and then a person came out. That's a technical term. You didn't get, you guys, Belgians, man. You guys just never laugh at anything, do you? over in the Netherlands, we were playing and what were we doing? I made some mistake and I was sitting in here and I'm sorry, I've been here a couple times, so I'm allowed to pick on you guys. I was over here, and I was like, oh, there's a Dutch method. That got a huge laugh. Well, you guys are just very polite, though, and I appreciate that. All right, so we've added stuff to the database, so that's cool. You want to just get rid of that? Do you think we can do that? All right. So what Drew is saying is that he wants to get rid of this form collection because he doesn't like that. So he wants me to go and change this to person P and just get rid of that. Is that what you're trying to do? All right, let's do that. So the point that Drew is making here is we've got model binding, right? And remember that Everything in MVC is swappable. You don't like the routing, swap it out. You don't like the way controllers work, swap it out. You don't have to use Entity Framework code first. Use nHibernate. Use an AS400 and an IBM DB2 database. I don't care. Use what makes you happy. You don't like model binding, the way model binding works? Get rid of it. What model binding is it's the act of taking that HTTP post and figuring out how to merge that, what's in the post, into an object. So here we had text boxes for first and last and age, and it automatically turned that into the object. What I was doing it explicitly before. I said, get a collection of things from that form, update model, and that was the explicit figure it out call. This is now the implicit. Just by virtue of the fact that I have a person on the method signature, the default model binder is going to fire, which is pretty cool. So that's nice. And we've done a minimal amount of effort, and it's going off to the database. So that's cool, right? So let us try this. Let's go back into the Package Manager console. And let's try install package EF code first SQL Server Compact. That's the tiny database we used before in Razor, in WebMatrix. And this is the thing I want to keep bringing up. Notice how I'm bringing Lego over from WebMatrix to my professional environment. That kind of lightweight way of talking to the database, the tiny database, IIS Express, Razor, it all fits together. So this just brought down a bunch of things. Notice that it's smart about references. Already had a reference to code first, needed some references to other things. I could have also done that visually. Let's go ahead and remove that. Real quick, I could go in here and hunt for it and do it from here. See, this is the list of those things I have installed already. Okay. All right, so now this is my app data folder. This is a local folder here. Let's just run our application. Catch that? Do it again. Watch the right hand side where it says this folder is empty. Right there, in that general area. Okay. That's what that feature is for in Windows 7, by the way. So that's that SDF file. That's a SQL Server Compact file. And when I go and publish this using WebDeploy, I can send that off, you know, wherever I like. I have a beta of Visual Studio Service Pack 1 on this machine. So I can go down into Publish. You can see all the different database publishing choices and web publishing choices that I can do. Making sure that, you know, include IIS settings as configured in Express, make sure that you bring the databases over. Same thing applies to WebMatrix. It makes deploying applications just a lot easier. And it's the same experience, the same engine underlying the publishing and the installing of apps in WebMatrix that makes it so easy also lives in Visual Studio, which is pretty sweet. Cool. So, yeah, and in just a couple minutes there, I was just goofing around. We did NuGet. We got SQL Server Compact. We made a couple of things. We added a database, created a database, defined how it looked. Cool. Let's do a little bit of sillier demos here because they're more fun. Now, jQuery. You'll see lots and lots of jQuery. We're doing piles of it. Are you guys, everyone here a jQuery fan? Right? Everyone's cool with jQuery? Cool. So let's see if this is going to work. I want to do the riskiest demo possible. So I'm VPN'd into work back home. It's 1:24 a.m., which means that the only person online is David Fowler. There he is. Hi, Dave. This is just, I know this because he's always up at this time. The other thing that's up online is this thing. You see this is ESP Cart 7? That's a computer in my office. That's not a person. So I can talk to that. I can send like send IP. So he's talking to me. He sent me his IP address. Okay? I'm going to call to do this. I'm going to call him and have him call me back. Yes, yes, there's Dave. I'm going to have to send Dave over to my office to turn this machine off, and it looks like it's not working. Hey. Now my risky demo may not be working. Let's terminal into that machine. I've made a little jQuery page to control my camera from remote. Still there, dude? But you won't call me. Let's see if we can do this. It worked in Amsterdam, but it was a little bit tricky. All right. Unless Dave is going to actually run over to the office and reboot this computer, I don't think it's going to work. So what we'll do is I'll show you this. It's really good. You should all have blogs because then you can Google yourself. So I built this. I took some super glue and a pan tilt zoom thing, and I have this webcam in the office because I don't live in Seattle like all the other Microsofties. I live, 300 kilometers south in Oregon. So I have this thing. So what I did was I built a little website with 5 buttons on it. So then when I click on those, it moves the camera. It's all done in jQuery. I'll show it to you in a second. I was very proud of this because it took about 20 minutes, and it wasn't because of my skill. It was just because jQuery was so nice. A lot of people say that people don't write JavaScript anymore. They don't. They only write jQuery. And if you look at your code and count the lines of code that are jQuery versus their actual proper JavaScript, you'll find that something like 60, 70% of the code you're writing is actually jQuery. So here's how I did it. I've got a controller. This is an ASP.NET controller. And I'm using this line 4 there is just the library that came with the camera. It's a COM object, funny thing. That's why I made it dynamic. Okay? And then I've got one method in my ASP.NET MVC application called move. And it just takes int x, int y, and then method, which is the way that I want it to move, whether it's relative or absolute. And it is an HTTP post, so I'm insisting that it only takes things via post. I can't access this via a get. Okay? So here's what the web page looks like. So this is a Razor web page, and this is just two pages in that one method. We're using our CDN. Microsoft has a content distribution network there that has jQuery and all the different AJAX libraries you want. So you can use that. It's actually cookieless now. It doesn't have any connection to the Microsoft.com domain. And it's geolocated, so it'll automatically pull the JavaScript library from somewhere near you. So we'll pay the bandwidth for your JavaScript on your site. So it's maybe something to think about. Guarantees that those things get run quickly. Then it's got all the buttons in a table. We'll come back to that in a second. And then all the jQuery is that. And it took a couple of times to think about this, because first I was writing it in the old style. I had a switch statement. If it's the up button, do this. If it's the left button, do that. Right? You know, this is how you iterate. You don't come on the most elegant solution in the first try. So you go and you iterate a couple of times. Line 46 there does a post. It says post to /webcam/home/move. That's where my ASP.NET MVC controller is. And then you see X, Y, and method. Every line there with a dollar sign is jQuery. So you think about this. There's not much JavaScript going on here. The thing that became really interesting was the HTML5 features that I got to use. You see on lines 43 through 45 where I'm saying get the target of this call and grab dot data? That's a new feature in jQuery that uses HTML5. Instead of having a switch statement for this is the left button, this is the right button, instead I put the values that I needed for coordinates on the buttons themselves, kind of where they belong. That's the right way to do it in a kind of meta-programming perspective. They're along for the ride. Anything that has data, hyphen, and then some string is an HTML5 data attribute. And this kind of brings me to the whole kind of silly thing about HTML5, right? People keep saying, well, when does ASP.NET going to support HTML5? That question happens all the time, mostly from people in ties, with all due respect, sir, in a tie. And the answer is usually last year, right? Because HTML5 is a loose collection of different features, right? I mean, do you think we can't output a video tag today? There's nothing keeping us from doing HTML5. So if you're waiting for us to do something magical to make HTML5 work, stop and just start writing HTML5. It's quite lovely. We'll have, you know, improved tooling and we'll do cool stuff on HTML5, but there's nothing preventing you from writing great HTML5 applications on Microsoft technologies today, whether they be web forms or MVC. You want to write HTML5 in web forms? It's totally cool. So here I've got like data value -10 for moving up, things like that. Those sit on those buttons, and that allowed me to hook up a jQuery click event. At line 47 right there, I could just say, all inputs on the page, you have the same event called click. And then I call move. I just put it there. I didn't need to. And then move says, go and get X, Y, and M and pull them off the button. But that was the target of the event. And then I was even able to hook up keystrokes. So I can do hotkey-based moving of my camera. So when I'm calling people over Windows Live Messenger or over Office Communicator, I can move the camera around and look at the whiteboard or, you know, see people. It freaks them out. It's pretty cool. All using my silly little jQuery application that I wrote in a few minutes. Required very minimal effort. And that right there was kind of the magic. Because you see how that maps directly with the default model binder to that method inside of ASP.NET MVC. For me, maybe you guys are all advanced and you're totally bored and too polite to leave, but this is another example of when all the Legos snapped together nicely and something got done in a really, really clean and I thought extremely elegant way. So I felt very empowered by this to do more things, and it's really got me thinking. Another cool example of some stuff that we can do with jQuery as it relates to ASP.NET MVC would be to make some of those create pages a little bit more complicated. We are now shipping jQuery UI with ASP.NET MVC. You've heard that we ship jQuery, right? It's an open source app. We ship it. We've got even more cool stuff. If you open up scripts, see what we're shipping right there? It's funny. Even at Microsoft, they get a little confused when they see jQuery there, and they have to go ask their bosses if it's okay. But this is really supported. Like, if you call Microsoft support and you have a problem with jQuery, they will support you. It's a real thing. And I hope to see more people shipping open source. And I know that Microsoft hasn't had always the best relationship with Europe when it comes to things like open source. But I can assure you that we are way less evil than we were. Plus, we're not nearly as organized as you think we are, to be as evil as you think we are. We're trying to make as many things open source as possible. MVC3 is open source. All the source is available for, you know, source opened for all of .NET. You can get source for jQuery and all the stuff that we've added to jQuery. We've added jQuery templating. We've added jQuery localization. We're committing back to it. NuGet, the entire NuGet package manager, the NuGet.org website, the package format, all of that's open source. You may have heard there's a tool called Sharp Develop. It's an IDE, an open source IDE. They integrated NuGet, and they have integrated NuGet support today. You'll start seeing things like that in Mono, hopefully, and other platforms. So we are trying to be open by default, as opposed to making it a big deal when we do something open. So here I've got jQuery UI, and I've got another person. I've got name and birthday. And when I go and run this little application, you user, is it person or people? Yep, people. You know, I've got this kind of text box here for their date of birth. It's kind of boring. It's a date time. In web forms, I would go and find all of the date time fields in my web form, and I would find like a Telerik date form control or some control from some company, and I would drag it over and I'd replace one control with another. So if my boss said, make all the date time controls infragistics, I would have to go and figure that out. I'd have to go and find a way to do that. That's the component model. That's the drag and drop component model of web forms. But with MVC, you can do some interesting thing with helpers. So here, when I generated my form there, you see how it says on line 20, editor 4. This is important. It didn't say text box 4. It said editor 4. By default, it got a text box. But I can change that. You have two choices, display 4 and editor 4. So with editor 4, as long as I have a control that's named correctly, in this case I'm going to make it called date time, that's going to get picked up automatically. If it's not there, I get the default, so it actually cascades. So I've got an editor template here called date time. I could also have another folder called display templates for when I want to show data. So here, we go and make a text box, and then we turn it into a date picker. So smart people in the room, what is wrong with this control that would make it not reusable? Yes, in the back. Right, we're using the ID. In this demo here, he's saying, go and find the control with the ID date picker and turn it into a date picker. A more appropriate thing would be to use a class and then have this thing go and find anything on the page, because right now, this is going to happen everywhere. The second thing that's wrong with it is that because this is encapsulated within this class, within this little helper, that little chunk of code, document ready, date picker, is going to appear everywhere that and repeat it over and over and over. That would probably be better to be pushed into a helper and put in one place. But for the purposes of the demo, this is what it is. But it's good that you guys are paying attention. Sorry, I'm doing month, day, year. Forgive me. But that's kind of slick. What that means is that I can now take control and keep things dry, right? Do you know what dry means? I can't tell you. If I did, I would have to repeat myself. Right? Keep things dry. Don't repeat yourself. This is nice that I don't have to go in all the different places and replace that. Every date picker everywhere would suddenly turn into a jQuery one. Now, if I wanted more granular control, maybe I only wanted one date time to show up that way, I could go and give it a hint. And I could do that. And then what would need to be the name of the control? My special date time picker. So then I could have all the date times behave one way, except I could override them. You have total control. This becomes an extremely, extremely powerful thing because not only can you do it for simple fields, but you can have complicated fields. You could say editor 4 model and have one called person. And then person could have editor 4 model for other things. You can actually cascade. You can have very complex types. And the way that you would build a form is just to say editor for person. And then there'd be a person 1, and then that would go and say editor 4, and it would cascade and cascade and cascade. You can build some really sophisticated and extremely dry forms using this technique. And then when you add in things like jQuery controls, hopefully you start to understand what the answer is when a web forms person comes in and says, where are the controls in MVC? Because what is a control in web forms? It's a complete square, a complete piece of functionality that you drag and you drop on the page, except there's that code behind. Controls in in MVC require that controller, that backing something. And they're usually created as helpers. So if you go and look at Telerik or Infragistics or some of these third-party vendors, they already have MVC controls, tree views and grid views and all sorts of really cool stuff. But they're not drag and drop. They're more markup-based. And they're a little more sophisticated. And they almost always have a lot of JavaScript on the client side, because that's where the processor power is, right? WebForms really assumes the processor power is on the server, and the server does a lot of work. MVC has a little bit more of an Ajax perspective and assumes that you can really do some hard work in JavaScript on the client. So that's kind of cool. How are we doing on time? 20 minutes? All right, cool. We got lots of time. What's that? An hour. I have an hour of content and I have 20 minutes? Yeah. So I have, how many Hansel minutes is that? All right. Some other cool things that we can do with forms. Or we can do what's called unobtrusive validation. This is new in MVC 3. And I always think this is kind of funny because there's these new settings available in the web config. One of them is client validation enabled, and the other one is unobtrusive JavaScript enabled. And that seems like a double or triple negative. Like, it could be totally obtrusive JavaScript disabled equals false, slightly offensive JavaScript enabled true. I mean, there's no way you can win with something like unobtrusive, because who would pick completely obtrusive? I don't even think that's a word. Is obtrusive a word without the un in front of it? It is? He says, you say it is? So let's look at obtrusive JavaScript, shall we? People or users? There we go. All right, so here is a little page. Hit create new. See that little jump there? That's because we're doing a post. We got validation, except we had to send that back to the server, and the server decided how this was going to look. Let's go take a look at our create page here. Validate min, and then let's make sure that we've got jQuery turned on. 144. All right. Let's do a view source. Let's wrap that. That is the obtrusive JavaScript. What that is actually is it's an array of all of the validation rules that are needed for this page. So the form was output, and then an array containing all the things that we would potentially need is created at the bottom, a JSON array. JSON's kind of funky looking. You can see like the field username must be a string with a maximum length of 30, and then it's got validation type and then max kind of embedded inside of there. And that can get pretty big. It's pretty hard to look at. It's impossible to debug. And a lot of people don't like that. It doesn't make view source a good experience. And some people might say, there's the view state. I knew they were putting view state in MVC somewhere. What we can do, though, we can fix that, hopefully. And look at our markup and see it's gone at the bottom. And instead, in MVC 3, see those red bits? We're using those HTML5 attributes again. So we put the validation information on the inputs again, just like I did with my little webcam demo. The idea being that keep that metadata with that part of the document object model. So here, you know, username and validation, we've got all that information here, and jQuery does that work for us. which is pretty cool. The jQuery, there it is, unobtrusive library is doing that work for us. Now on username, I want to have that kind of experience that you get on Hotmail when you start typing and it'll tell you that something is not available, certain name is not available. As I'm typing here, it's talking to the back end. Let's see if we can see that. I'll bring up Fiddler. You guys use Fiddler? Awesome, awesome, awesome. If you don't, just stop right now, run outside and download Fiddler. It's that good. So I'm going to just bring up Fiddler. Fiddler's going to let me sniff the traffic. So as I'm doing things, see the traffic appearing on the Fiddler side? So I'm going to start typing. Let's look at that Fiddler information. And that is calling is username available, passing in username, and then it's telling us whether that's available or not. So that's called remote validation. And that's cool. It's really easy. Here I'm just saying, for the username, call is username available on this controller. So I've got all of the other validation stuff, but I've also got remote validation. And that's plugging in automatically with jQuery. So you can see how we're starting to depend on this open source library to do some of the cool things we wanted to do. And you can do kind of whatever you want. In this case here, we've got a little thing that says, see if the user exists. If they don't, this is cheesy, but this is what we're doing. Suggest, basically spin through the next 100. You know, if I type James and James not available, James 1, James 2, and I keep doing it over and over. You might want to do something a little less naive, but that's the general idea. Here we're going in, we're suggesting, and we're saying, James is not available, try James 1, try James 2. That's all being sent back automatically with jQuery and an AJAX call and integrated with that validation, as well as the other bits of validation that still apply, like the length and whether or not it's required. Makes it really, really easy to do this kind of stuff. Pretty sophisticated stuff with minimal effort. But again, one of the things that I like about this and why I keep working here is that it doesn't feel like magic like it used to. Like sometimes we would show demos like this and be like, ta-da, jazz hands, sparkle fingers. And you would never really know what was happening. You know what I mean? It's like, da-da-da-da-da, drag a data grid, miracle, yes, Cirque du Soleil, all right? But you never find out what happens at the miracle part. With the way that things are working now with MVC and with jQuery and with IIS and with AJAX, is that you just look at Fiddler and see. And if I don't understand that, I can look at the source code for MVC itself. Look at the tests. There's like 5,000 tests, unit tests inside of ASP.NET MVC3. You know, I've got more tutorials than ever before, and I've got the source code available. It's just it feels much more transparent box, much more white box than black box. And that makes me happy. And I want us to make more and more of our products plug in like that. So it's everything's not so much a mystery. How are we doing? Good? 2 minutes? No, we have more than 2 minutes. I came all this way. No, we've got... You know, we're going to see everything. I will not skip a demo for the people. Let's look at global action filters. Do this a little bit quicker. Is that better? Okay, cool. All right, let's run this. Do we think really I need to be clicking and moving around any faster? I think people are getting car sick. Ooh. This is not helping? No? Okay. Thank you for that. So we've got a little visit counter here in MVC where we've got number of visits 1. As I hit refresh, I'm just seeing the visits increasing. Okay. And if I open up another window, I've got about over here, and I hit F5. Just I'm making it click, 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 click. See how it's not incrementing that counter. It's because we have a filter that's hooked up just for that one method that's going to capture the kind of the horizontal aspect of things. Sometimes in MVC or in web applications, you don't want something to happen on a specific vertical call. You want them to happen on all calls. So here we have this counter attribute that we just made for a demo, and I applied it to index. And that's incrementing each time. I can take that counter attribute, and I can go over here, and in MVC3 now I can say, new counter attribute, and I've added that to a collection of global action filters for things like authorization or authentication or error handling or counting or whatever. And as with all Microsoft demos, you can see that this uses really high quality multi-threaded error-proof code. I'll show you the advanced error-proof techniques that we're using here at Microsoft. Guaranteed to work on my machine. Let's go ahead and run it. see if it is as we'll do a little poor man's multi-threading. Ready? All right. So, so that appears to be working now. It's firing every single time. It's load testing also. So that's called a global action filter. So you can take control of your applications this direction, right, horizontally, the aspect way, and vertically. Global action filters make that easy. You can make an action filter on an action, on a controller, or globally, which is very cool. All right, let's do some dependency injection, shall we? Cool. Does everyone know what dependency injection is? This took me a long time. Dependency injection is something that you say to make your coworkers think you're smart. Yeah, I just use a little inversion of control, a little scaffolding, some dependency injection. Just invert the control, and yeah, no problem. PhD. I felt very stupid for a very long time because I did not know what that meant, what dependency injection meant, an inversion of control. Why inversion of control? It seemed like turning control on its head. And it seemed like control was fine the way it was, and I was very confused. But the idea is that what if your controller has some dependencies, and those dependencies have dependencies, and things get very complicated. For example, let's make a class. Let's make a new class here. Bless you. Add class. We'll say message service. Okay. And let's make a public string get message. Method, return, awesome. Okay, so there's some service, a repository or something that I'm going to access. And I can go over here and I can say message service, service equals new message service. Make one of those. And then we can change this to say service dot, oop, that's Dutch, dot get message. Right? Yay. I'm great. In what's it called? Single responsibility principle. Cool. He's responsible for this, and there's a service that handles that. And then someone comes along and says, well, what if this depends on logging, and that depends on databases, and things depend on dependencies, and it starts getting complicated. So then I say, well, I'm a new programmer. I'm learning about these things. I need an interface, because everyone says interfaces are good. So I'm going to right-click and refactor and say extract interface. Because that seems like a good idea. I'll go and make an iMessage service, and I'll pick get message. I'll hit OK. So now I have an interface. So message service implements that interface. I'll go over here, and I will say, awesome. Success. Right? This is the best. Now I'm a programmer. But then a smarter guy at work says, well, no, because you still depend on message service. That's not good. You need to do this in a better way. So he says, well, you need to do constructor injection. You need to have a constructor that has home controller, and then that will take an I message service, something, service, and then you set it like this. Right? Oops. And I go back here and I'll make him public. And now I'm a programmer. And he's like, "Woo?"
Right.
No, trust me. I've done this before. But you gave me, he gave me what the Scooby-Doo face. So at this point, I'm just moving things around, right? In the U.S., we say we're rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, right? We're just moving stuff around. What I really want is I want to get rid of that dependency. I've been rearranging things. This is called poor man's dependency injection. I don't want to have to do that. I want to do this. Right? So now there's no message service anywhere there. There's only the iMessage service. So I say, okay, well, then that's what I need to do. I'll just run that, and that'll be awesome. Right? No parameterless constructor. So then I'm back to making a constructor and creating a message service, and it becomes a big mess. Now what I'll do with NuGet is I'm going to bring up the package management console, and I'm going to say install package. I'm going to use one of my favorite dependency injection systems called Ninject. And they have a MVC3 specific package, because MVC3 has opened itself up so that many, many things can be taken over from a dependency injection perspective. There's a dependency resolver. What this means is I want someone else to make me an iMessage service. Just like before, when we said /home/about at the very beginning of the talk, we didn't have to make ourselves. We shouldn't be making iMessage service either. Let's let somebody else do that. So I'm going to say install package, Ninject, and it's going to go off, and it's going to get Ninject and download it and go da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it brought down Ninject and the MVC extension to that and a thing called Web Activator. And it added a reference to that. And Ninject is a great little, you could use whatever you like, but Ninject is a great little dependency injection system. And they're using a new feature called the dependency resolver. Tell MVC3 that I'm in charge of making things. That's what that line says. And then I can say, when you need an iMessage service, give me a message service. Now, this is a naive example because it's still here, but at least it's centralized. It could be in a config file, it could be in a database, it could be wherever. But the point is, Ninject is in charge of making stuff now. And that error that we got before, that error that said no parameterless constructors, there still isn't a parameterless constructor. Except Ninject knows that. ASP.NET knows that Ninject is in charge of making things, and when it comes time to hit /home/whatever, ASP.NET MVC says, okay, who's making things today? Ninject, you are here. Cool. Make one of these. And Ninject looks at it and says, oh, you need a message service. Where do I get those? Those are here. Boom, make it. Boom, like that. Separation of concerns. Nice and clean and simple. How much time do I have now? Like 3 minutes, right? 2 minutes. All right, can we do it? Let's make an entire website in 2 minutes. Should have drank more Diet Coke. I don't think I can do it. All right. Let's go over here. File new project. New project. MVC3. Internet application. Here's my web application. Let's bring up package manager console. That's not it. There it is. Pin it. Zoom, zoom, zoom. Clear. Install package. MVC. Scaffold. Ing. New. Scaffolding. Remember all that little bits of scaffolding that we're doing before? We'd make a little view, we'd make a little this, make a little that. MVC scaffolding's a little bit easier. Now, EF code first, sample. ES code first, SQL Server Compact. let's take a look. We've added a little blog here. Oh, and there's the guy that wrote it. Me and Steve working on this. So we've got ID and title. Notice the text is set up as multi-line, because our blog needs to have multi-line stuff. Publish date. It also has a collection of comments. So we'll come over here. Oops, where'd it go? Sorry. Pin. Scaffold. Controller. Post. So this is a new thing we're working on that will hopefully get built in at some point. And what this is doing is it's looking at the post object, and it's generating the controller, it's generating the database context, it's generating all the information you need to do CRUD, create, read, update, delete. It created all the views, created the database context, it did everything. Let's run it. We did it for post, if I remember correctly. Create new. This is a blog. I am cool. 111. Cool. Create new. La 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 la. 2/1/2011. Delete. We got complete CRUD all at once. But if I look in the controller, it's talking to this database context directly. So you like look at that query there on line 27. You know, it's a little too close to the metal, as we like to say. So I'm going to bring up the package manager. And I'll leave that query right there. And I'll scaffold controller post again, except this time I'm going to say /repository, but I already made this, so I'm going to have to say force to redo it. And then we'll watch line 27. So now we've gone and generated a repository, which is pretty hot. And if you're using dependency injection, you can delete the following, like that. So then I'll go back over here and I'll say install package inject MVC. Then I'll drop in here and I'll say if you want an post repository, then give me a post repository. So now I've got CRUD, I've got all my views, create, read, update, delete, I've got validation, including all of the new jQuery validation stuff. I'm using Ninject, dependency injection, and it all just works, and it took maybe 2.5 minutes. So that's some of the cool stuff that's in the web platform. I hope that you check it out. It snaps together just like Lego. It's a lot of fun, and we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll learn about HTML5. Then we'll learn about jQuery and stuff. Then we'll learn about OData. Thank you very much.